Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason.
And I'm Liz Siegert, and we're the host for today's Health Style program that's sponsored by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York.
For those of you who are used to hearing Health Styles on Thursday evenings at 11 o'clock, we're pleased to announce that we're back to daytime on Thursdays from 1 to 2 every week beginning in June. Some of you may remember us from our Friday 1 o'clock slot that we held for a number of years, and I have to say it's great to be back on days. Health Styles has been produced for almost 30 years by myself and my colleague Barbara Glickstein. We're expanding our production team and are pleased that Liz Siegert has joined us and is with us here in the studio today. It's great to be on radio with you, Liz.
Yes, happy to be here, Diana.
You may have heard Liz on Health Styles before. She is a senior fellow with the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College and covers aging issues for the Association of Healthcare Journalists as well as other media outlets. Today on Health Styles, we're going to tap into some of her expertise on aging by talking about the challenges of family caregiving for older adults and other aging issues. We'll first talk about the once-a-decade White House Conference on Aging that is to take place in 2015. Anne Montgomery is a senior policy analyst at the Alterum Institute, and she talks with Liz about some of the most critical issues facing elder care advocates in the coming years that can and should shape the agenda for this once-a-decade White House Conference on Aging. And then following that segment, we will be joined live by Jamie Nesbitt Golden, a freelance writer who recently wrote about elder care, the forgotten feminist issue for hood feminism. And before we get into these issues, we have a couple of items to share with you on a regular Health Styles health news update. But before we do want to encourage you throughout this program to support this station by making a donation to 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or you can go online to wbai.org. If you make a pledge or donation today of $50, you will get the best of WBAI on a thumb drive. That's for $50. For $180, you can get an 8-gigabyte thumb drive with 100 different phenomenal speakers in a collection that WBAI is making available. Plus, you get the best of WBAI. That 100-person speaker includes people like Noam Chomsky and Rachel Maddow and others. And we'll talk more about it later, but you might want to grab that now by calling 212-209-2950. Or we'd love for you to become a WBAI buddy and get both of these for what is $10 a month. $10 a month. You spend more on a cup of coffee, a couple cups of coffee during the week than you would than that amount. So for $10 a month, you can become a sustaining, supporting member of WBAI. So we encourage you to do that. And of course, we greatly appreciate it when you call in and say you're calling in support of WBAI and Health Styles. So we'll do more of that conversation a little bit later in the program, but we want to start with our health news update today. And for those of you, this is a really important piece of information for those of you who are worried about facing what is predicted to be a very hot summer. You do not have air conditioning. So we know that some people are at very high risk during hot summers, very high risk for health problems from the heat, heat stroke in particular. And people die when it's too hot. And the people who are most at risk are seniors, older adults, people with chronic physical health conditions or psychiatric illnesses, people who take medications that can impair your temperature regulation, and those of you who drink alcohol heavily or use drugs are also at increased risk for heat-related injuries. And air conditioning is probably the single most important thing that you can do to prevent adverse consequences from this heat. So New York City is making available to people who qualify free air conditioners. So if you are at risk, you can apply, but you have to be able to have your health care provider, your physician, your nurse practitioner, your physician's assistant to document that you are at high risk for sustaining heat injury. And if you do, you meet certain income criteria, and these are the income criteria for the Home Energy Assistance Program, or HEAP, and if you meet those criteria, then you can possibly qualify. Now, the income criteria is that for a four-person household, the maximum amount that you can make in a month is $4,182. So it's a fairly high level. If you would like more information, you can go online to mybenefits.ny.gov. That's mybenefits.ny.gov, or call the New York State HEAP hotline at 1-800-342-3009. That's 1-800-342-3009. Now, if it's easier, try calling 311 and ask them to refer you to the New York City Human Resources Administration for information about the free air conditioners.
And in other news, up in Albany, the New York Senate has introduced a series of bills dubbed the Women's Equality Act. Actually, they've reintroduced them after many of those bills were derailed last year because of a late-term abortion proposal. The Democrats say that these bills cover issues like reproductive rights, pay equity, sexual harassment, human trafficking, and tougher order of protection laws that they say are absolutely necessary to protect women. And Senator Liz Krueger from Manhattan had a great comment on that. She says women are 52% of the state, and we aren't supposed to be 80% of a human being. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to earn less than men for the same jobs. Of course, they're referring to the New York Times decision last week to replace Jill Abramson, who is reported to have been making less money than her male predecessor, as one of the reasons for the need for these sets of laws. Of course, the paper has denied that the compensation package was any less. But importantly, the abortion bill, supporters say that it will simply match the 1970 state law with a less restrictive one that is in line with the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973, because they fear that the federal law might be struck down, and that would do nothing to change abortion as it's now practiced. However, Republicans are putting up a great deal of resistance to this, and Speaker Sheldon Silver said he won't consider the other nine bills unless the abortion measure is included. So the drama in the New York State Senate continues as usual.
Good. And you've got another item.
Well, now we're going to turn to health insurance, which is also obviously on everybody's mind. The Washington Post is reporting, based on a report from the Milliman actuary firm, the typical cost of health care for a family of four with employer-based insurance is a little bit over $23,000. And the bad news is that amount has doubled in the past 10 years. However, the good news is that the cost grew just 4.5% between 2013 and 2014, the slowest growth rate since Milliman started keeping track in 2002. And remember, that $23,000 isn't what the employee pays. Employers pay about 60% of that, or about $13,500, while workers pay the rest through payroll deductions and out-of-pocket costs. However, the employee share of costs has been rising faster, 73% since 2007, faster than the employer contribution, which has grown 52% over that same period. But supporters say don't blame the Affordable Care Act for these changes just yet. So far, the new law has had barely any effect on the large employer plans, but that's about to change. Obamacare's impending excise tax on Cadillac plans, which are those valued at least $27,500 for family coverage, and that starts in 2018. That's going to probably cause many employers to scale back their health plans. However, other things may help mitigate those increases. consumers are becoming savvier healthcare shoppers. And that's because they're starting to shop around and healthcare prices are actually becoming more transparent. However, on the other hand, specialty drugs increasingly becoming more expensive. So all this is to say that what large employers are going to do and what employees can bear is still evolving.
And that brings us to the final health news update today, and that is that all of this is creating a window of opportunity for those of us who support single payer as an option here for how to run our healthcare system. And this week, Julie Rovner reported for Kaiser Health News that the single payer advocates lobbied for Medicare for All this week in Washington. But it's an uphill battle, according to Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who has long been supportive. But he told the advocates, this is tough stuff. Single-payer health care bills, it ain't going to take place here in Washington. I suspect it's going to take place as it did in Canada with a state, Saskatchewan, going forward. I hope it will be my state. His state meaning is, of course, Vermont. And Vermont is poised to go for single-payer option to become a single-payer system in Vermont by 2017. And indeed, people in New York State are also talking actively about a single-payer option. So this is an opportunity time for us to look to the states to move the single payer option forward, and a lot more to come on that front. So that's the health news update today.
And meantime, all states and the federal government as a whole has to deal with an aging population that's living longer and with more chronic disease. Are we prepared to care for the projected onslaught of people with Alzheimer's, for example? What's being done to address the long-term care needs of our most vulnerable populations? These are just some of the questions the next White House Conference on Aging hopes to answer when it convenes in 2015. This is a once-a-decade gathering of top policymakers, advocacy groups, health providers, and other stakeholders who feed in ideas from the community level in hopes of spurring a national consensus on approaching the current challenges. And then they'll work to map out strategies for the future. I spoke with Anne Montgomery, who's a senior policy analyst at the Alterum Institute, several weeks ago, and we discussed some of the most critical issues facing elder care advocates in the coming year.
The White House Conference on Aging is a once-in-a-decade conference which makes policy recommendations to the President and Congress to promote the dignity, health, and economic security of older Americans. The last conference was in 2005 and focused on the impending baby boomer retirement surge. In preparation for a 2015 conference, a preliminary workshop was held at the recent American Society on Aging meeting in San Diego. Anne Montgomery, policy advisor to the National Academy of Social Insurance and the Alterum Institute, along with Bob Blancato, a policy and advocacy consultant, who served in various senior staff roles for the House Select Committee on Aging Subcommittee on Human Services, and Gail Hunt, President and CEO of the National Alliance for Caregiving, led an open forum where participants discussed the progress made and the initiatives that still need to happen. I sat down with Anne after the session for her perspective on where we go next. Let's start off with recapping what happened in this White House Conference on Aging session. Why did you decide to hold this, and what do you think came out of it?
Okay. Well, we decided to hold it because we wanted to generate some energy and to let the White House and the Administration for Community Living, who are the leads on this very exciting phenomenon called the White House Conference on Aging in 2015, we wanted to let them know that there are people who really want this to happen, who want to participate, who have ideas, who want to reframe some of the discussion that's going on in the country, and particularly Washington, D.C., that is fairly dysfunctional, is not leading to solutions, and is not going to help us necessarily transform society the way that a lot of people would like to see it transformed. So we asked for this session at ASA some 6 months ago. Bob Blancato, Gail Hunt, and myself. And Bob and Gail have a history of heading up White House conferences on aging previously. I do not, but I've attended some of the sessions in 2005. And we are activists, pure and simple. And everybody in the room who showed up today is also an activist. And they want this to happen, and they want to participate and be part of it. And I think the exciting thing about the actual meeting is that it just shows you, when you think about those 40 people in the room, how many more people they know, the organizations that they're part of, and how we really could pull this off in terms of gathering the input that is the hallmark of a White House Conference on Aging, which is from average citizens, informed citizens from around the country. And that's what we really want to aim for, and that's what I hope that we can pull off.
The last White House conference was in 2005. What has come out of that that can be built on for this coming conference?
The last White House Conference on Aging, I think, was a very good one in the sense that it brought energy around elder abuse and I think helped promote the kind of momentum in Congress and elsewhere for the Elder Justice Act, which was ultimately part of the Affordable Care Act and is slowly being implemented with ACL as the lead. And it also strengthened the role of aging disability resource centers that are a real key to delivery of long-term services and supports at the community level. And it flagged long-term care generally and the lack of a coherent system as an issue that needed to be addressed, still needs to be addressed. So I think those are some of the top achievements of the 2005 conference. But there's a bigger agenda, I believe, that we can look to for the 2015 conference, and that is really the kind of transformation that we're going to go through as, you know, one-fifth of society become 65 or older. So I think that the scope, if you will, of this upcoming conference could be a little broader, and the discussion could be a little more creative, could include people who perhaps weren't historically at White House conferences on aging. We could include tech experts, we could include economists, we could include mathematicians, we could include and should include younger people, creative artists. We really need a very broad-based conversation, I think, for this 2015 event.
What's the message you're hoping to give to the President and to members of Congress when all is said and done?
Well, I think there are probably many messages, hopefully, that would come out of this, because if you start where people live, which is in communities, and you ask them to imagine, you know, the future or the present as an older person, and what they want, what they expect, and what they'd like to see improved, what the gaps are, you're really talking about how people live their lives and how they want them to be better. It has nothing to do with the kinds of sort of disagreements at the political level that we're seeing at the national level. So I think that Washington needs to hear that, and I think they'll be better off for it, knowing that these are the priorities, if we can articulate them and we can have some meetings and we can get some resolutions and some policy recommendations coming up from that grassroots level. I think it will help to transform the culture in Washington, actually.
You are obviously an optimist.
Yes, unabashed.
Given the discourse and the vitriol that we're seeing every day, what realistically are the chances of things moving forward that will provide perhaps some additional social services or funding for social programs?
I think the initiatives that we need to think about are at multiple levels of government. So that would be, you know, local and state and federal. So it's not just that one lens, I think, that we need to aim for. I think we need to work simultaneously on initiatives at all those levels. And that is the structure and the framework, you know, historically of White House Conferences on Aging. And I think it will probably, hopefully, be the structure of this one. So it's a little hard to predict, you know, precisely what could come out of such a campaign and such a national conference, but you could see initiatives at various levels of government in transportation, in, you know, integrating services really much better across our major social insurance programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and the Older Americans Act, to do a better job of, you know, together supporting older adults who want to remain at home their entire lives or most of their lives. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of service delivery reform that needs to be done. Some financing proposals would be terrific as well. But we have a lot to work with now, and we can use those tools to make huge gains. The other thing is that a White House Conference on Aging is meant to lay out an agenda, forward-looking agenda, over the next decade. So we don't have to come up with resolutions or recommendations that are immediately enacted. You know, it can be a blueprint for subsequent meetings and research and conferences and discussions to be implemented over time at various levels, you know, and various parts of our government, various parts of our communities, various parts of our economic engine, if you will. So it's not going to stop, you know. It's part of an ongoing movement.
Are there things that are happening now on the state or local levels that you can point to and say these are the kinds of things we should replicate or build upon?
Yes. Some of the work, actually, now I'm wearing my hat at the Alterum Institute, that we're doing there, and there are other similar efforts to develop better models of integrated care. Those are really basically small-scale efforts at the community level, and they do involve creating interdisciplinary care teams that span not just the healthcare sector but also the social services sector, and that serve a population in a given area that is in need of services. And that kind of innovation, I think, really has to kind of start small and grow. So those are the sorts of ideas that we can probably talk a lot more about, that we can test a lot more, that we can evaluate, that we can improve and scale up.
We have a perception of aging and of older people in this country that isn't very positive in many respects. How do we go about changing that vision?
I think that we embrace what will over time become one-fifth of our population as a very vigorous and important sector of the population that has decades of life to volunteer, to work, to contribute to community. It isn't all about decline and death. I mean, there is that time when we all go through that. But there is also a very rich era where if we embrace older adults for their full potential, we will actually create a much better society.
So what can people do on the local level if they want to get involved in some of these causes or some of these issues or have input into this conference that's coming up in another year and a half or so?
Well, we're just starting today. Today was the first meeting, really, the first public meeting that anybody has had. And it wasn't officially sanctioned, you know, by the White House or the Administration for Community Living. But the people that showed up made it clear that they wanted to participate, and they signed in, and we're going to be feeding back their ideas and their thoughts to them. We're going to take this forward to ACL and the White House. I hope that we can create a place, I know we can, online where people can contribute their own ideas, where we can have a dialogue, where they can indicate how they would like to contribute, perhaps how they can sponsor a meeting in a community or a series of meetings. So we'll have to kind of figure out the precise details, and that will be up to the White House and ACL to figure out once they hire an executive director. But I do believe that it's going to be a very open process, and there will be many ways to participate.
And as far as the agenda setting, are there a couple of issues, three or four perhaps, that you think absolutely have to be discussed?
From a meeting that we held last fall, it was a very informal meeting. Bob Lancato was there, Gail Hunt, a number of aging organizations, caring across generations, disability groups, minority representatives, officials representing minority groups, really quite a diverse grouping, and we tossed around ideas for what we would want to talk about at that time. It was entirely hypothetical as to whether we would hold a White House Conference on Aging. And we came up with sort of a list, if you will, of about 10 areas that we thought needed to be further examined. And so I'll run through a couple of them. Planning access and promising initiatives for addressing the dilemma of long-term care. Diversity, caregiving, workforce, what are the core training and growth needs? Older adults with disabilities, what are the top priorities for action? The role of research in improving the care of frail elders and individuals with functional limitations. Income security, post-65, and staying connected to community life. technology in the age wave, and then just kind of a catch-all category for the innovative ideas, whatever they may be, that emerge from meetings and discussions that are held online. So those are some of the top priorities that we came up with. That doesn't mean that it is a limited list. It might grow. But at a certain point, there was some discussion today. We need to recognize that in order to make all of the conversations that I hope will occur across the country digestible at the national level, I think we need certain tracks, if you will. And so we need to be crisp about what those tracks are. And probably these will be some of them. There may be others. But we'd like to funnel up really the best ideas and the best solutions across a range of topics that is handleable, if you will.
Well, it's a pretty ambitious agenda, but as you mentioned, you're an optimist. So if we're sitting here in 10 years talking about the 2025 Conference on Aging, you and I will both be on the other side of the divide, so to speak. Are you optimistic about what we'll see?
I am. It's much more fun to be an optimist than it is to be a pessimist. And I think with people like those we saw in the room today, people at this conference, people that we all know, there's sky's the limit. I mean, we have the ability to work through our challenges, and the opportunities are incredible. So as long as we prepare, as long as we think carefully about the kinds of transformations that are going to occur and don't wait until it's too late and then turn around and say, oh my gosh, you know, our healthcare costs are exploding and we can't possibly serve all these people. Well, we can, but we have to plan for it, and we have to make rational changes in the systems that we have in order to be more efficient, to lower per capita costs, to improve quality, to have much more accountability of all providers to each and every individual. We will have a good future. If we don't do that, then you and I will not be so happy 10 years from now. So it's up to us.
Any other thoughts that are for our listeners about getting involved, taking some action on their own?
Well, I'm a big believer in taking action at the local level. I really am. I believe that local initiatives are open to everybody. All you have to do is show up, you know, at your local town hall meeting, at your senior center, at your zoning board meeting, whatever it is that you really want to participate in, you want to learn about. So I just encourage everybody to get involved, perhaps in the White House Conference on Aging, perhaps on some other level, but definitely, you know, go and see what's in your community, how you want to be involved, how you want to improve it, and you will be better off, and so will everybody else.
Think global, act local.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ann. For Health Else, I'm Liz Siegert.
And once again, that was Ann Montgomery, Senior Policy Advisor at the Alterum Institute, speaking about the 2015 White House Conference on Aging. Aging is on everybody's minds these days as our population continues to age into the old, those 85 and older. And the reality is that women are still overwhelmingly the primary caregivers for older adults, especially true in the Black community. Elder care isn't only a policy issue, as Anne was discussing, but it's also a forgotten feminist issue, according to writer Jamie Nesbitt Golden. Jamie is a freelance writer from Chicago and co-hosts Nerdgasm Noir, a weekly podcast at nerdgasmnoir.net. A caregiver herself, she wrote a thought-provoking piece for Hood Feminism last month that raised the issue of diversity and culture in caregiving. Thank you for joining us on Health Styles today, Jamie.
Thank you for inviting me.
You talk in your blog quite a bit about the choices that women must make, whether to take in an aging parent or place them somewhere. And yet in the African-American community, it's almost a what you call a familiar, depressing narrative. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you meant by that.
Well, for a lot of us, we have to sort of make the tough decision whether to take in our elderly relative or put them in a nursing home or a nursing facility. I know in my mother's case, we couldn't afford it, so we wound up taking in my grandmother, the strain on her emotionally and financially was great. But we, it's a sort of a cultural taboo to leave your elder in the care of the state or another facility. So, it's a major sacrifice, and I can't imagine how my mother pulled it off, but she managed to make it work.
Yeah, and you mentioned your mother was not certainly wealthy by any means. She was raising a young family at the time, and somehow she did manage to make it work. Is this something that you feel is still prevalent in the African American community today, or is there a little less back and forth in terms of grandparents or other relatives coming to live with the family these days?
I still believe it's prevalent, not so much in my age group, because most of my contemporaries have parents who are younger than they are, so they don't have to worry about these things. But for my slightly older friends, they have these issues where, they have to think about whether, to move in with the parents to take care of them or sell the house and have them come out there. And in doing so, how will this affect their career, and how will this affect their families? These are all things that they still have to consider, and I think it's still pretty prevalent.
And one of the other things you talked about in your blog was an inherent distrust of institutionalized care, citing some of the things that were done to many members of the African-American community in the 50s and 60s and still going on in some cases. Let's talk a little bit about that. What exactly did you mean by this inherent distrust of institutions?
Well, given the rise in elder abuse, it's a little, you can't help but be a little distrustful, especially now. Recently, having to find facilities for my mother to go to rehab, there are certain places that just can't take her because of the reputation. I remember her calling me after, talking to social workers at the hospital about not taking her to a specific nursing home, that they did just that. And my mother was calling me, and she was inconsolable because she didn't want to be there because she knew that the level of care that she was going to receive wasn't going to be much, if anything. And we had to literally break her out of the nursing home. And there are a lot of cases like these where, when my mother was still able-bodied and she had friends who were in nursing homes, she would tell me these stories about neglect and complete disinterest in helping these people. And these are the stories that stay with me. And that's why I'm extra careful when it comes to, trusting or finding a facility that will help my mother, and, not treat her as, a burden, but, find a place that will actively engage her and try to make her as comfortable and happy as possible.
Okay, Jamie, I just have to pause for 1 second to remind our listeners that this is WBAI. And you're listening to Health Styles, co-hosted by Diana Mason and me. I'm Liz Siegert. And I want to get back to our conversation with Jamie Nesbitt Golden, who is a freelance writer from Chicago and writing about elder care, the forgotten feminist issue. One of the things you talk about so beautifully in your blog is your interaction with your mother today. Now, she is in institutionalized care, and you had to kind of come to terms with that choice. How did that go?
It was really hard. I'm the baby of the family. My eldest brother has retired to Phoenix with his wife. But for the last 20 years, they were sort of they sort of held the family together, and that they were always the one. They were the go-to people when it came to taking care of the elders in our family. And when they retired, I sort of took on the responsibility. And it's hard. The change is hard. And it's difficult to watch your mother sort of change from this incredibly strong strong-willed, you know, woman. Well, she's still strong-willed, but this incredibly strong, cognizant, smart woman into, you know, a creature that you don't recognize. My mother was and still is an amazingly caring, compassionate person. And these are things that I carry with me or consider when taking care of her. But it is, again, incredibly difficult, especially when you watch your parent sort of lose her faculties and you have to rely on, you know, the network that you have, if you have one. And for most people, that's not possible because they don't have one.
Jamie, this is Diana Mason, one of the co-hosts of Health Styles. Thank you for sharing your story today. And I'm actually interested in, from your seat, from your experience, if you had one plea to policymakers on a policy that you believe could help family caregivers and their loved ones, what would you ask for?
In terms of working women, I would ask more flexibility when it comes to family leave. I would ask programs like Capable of being federally funded so that more people can take advantage of them.
And what is Capable? Tell people about Capable.
So Capable is a program out of the West Coast, if I'm not mistaken, where folks go to the homes of elderly people and sort of, you know, act as their companions slash handyman. And in that, they, you know, perform household tasks, but they also sort of give companionship to the elderly person. And it's been, according to reports, a very successful experiment in that it keeps it keeps the grandparents sharp, focused. It gives them something to look forward to, and it benefits the person offering that as well. So,
and is that funded by foundations at this point, or privately funded?
I think it's privately funded at this point.
Yes. And one more ask that you would have?
I guess more attention to I'm so caught off guard and I'm doing a thousand things at once.
That's quite all right. You've given us two very good asks, and I would suggest with your good recommendation about more flexibility with the Family and Medical Care Act, Leave Act, that indeed we need to fund those leaves. That right now in the United States, we are one of the few countries that does not fund somebody to take a family medical leave. So that certainly would help and probably would have helped you when you were caring for your mother.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Jamie, I just want you to give listeners the URL of your blog again so that if they want to follow your writing and follow this issue a little bit more and other feminist issues, they can.
Oh, sure. It's hoodfeminism.com.
Great.
Hoodfeminism.com.
Jamie Nesbitt-Golden, thank you so much for joining us today on Health Styles. And again, I encourage people to go to that website and read Jamie's blog. It's very moving on elder care, the forgotten feminist issue.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this is these topics, both of these segments today have really talked about the importance of the issue of an aging society that we have and how we're going to manage in the future and how we're managing now. Health Styles has done a number of programs on family caregiving, and I would encourage you to, we'd love to, if this weren't a fundraiser right now, we would be opening up the lines for your calls, because whenever we do this program on family caregiving, we hear from people who are around the studio and heard the program, or we hear from you, the listeners. And because we don't have that capacity today, I would encourage people to go to the Center for Health Media and Policy's website and post your comments on today's. I've posted a blog post about today's program, and you can just post, share your stories as under the comments section after that post. And the URL for the Center for Health Media and Policy site is www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. These are really important issues, Liz.
They are incredibly important, and as a matter of fact, there are some new statistics that just came out by the Alzheimer's Association that within the next 20 to 30 years, the incidence of Alzheimer's is going to probably double, if not triple. And the big problem is that we don't have the caregivers in place, and we don't have the programs in place to take care of all these people that need help.
So these are some of the issues that we talk about on Health Styles, and now we're going to ask you to show your support of this station and for this kind of programming by going to your phones and calling to the station to make a donation. A donation today at 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. We are not pitching today a special premium of whatever to lure you in. Rather, we want to appeal to your sense of justice, the importance of social justice that this radio station stands for, your sense of support for an alternative voice in radio and in media, and to show your support by making a donation to this station. You can, for $50, we will, the premiums that are available is for $50 a thumb drive of the best of WBAI, and that you get as a new member of this to the station. Again, it's by calling 212-209-2950. For $180, you'll get that thumb drive of the best of WBAI, but you'll also get an eight gigabyte thumb drive that has a collection of 100 different speakers on it who are fabulous people, including Noam Chomsky and Rachel Maddow and a whole host of others. And I'm going to ask Reggie Johnson to step in here. He engineers our program, and we're very grateful to his time. We couldn't do this without him, and so your donation helps to support us having a great engineer here to bring this program to you. And Reggie, who else is on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of people on this thing. Amy Goodman is on this as well. Bill Ayers, Christopher Hitchens, Chris Hedges, Russell Simmons, Van Jones. Aradati Roy, Tariq Ali. Essentially, there's like about 2 days worth of sound.
Yeah.
Over 2 days worth of sound. I think
probably more than that. Actually,
I think it's been told to me that there's about 50, 60 hours worth of content in here. It's just amazing.
Great.
It's just interviews and interviews and interviews of all these brilliant individuals.
And speeches. Some of them are giving.
Oh, yeah.
Roy
Churchill
venues.
Is one. Yeah. It's another one as well. Studs Terkel.
Yeah.
Salman Rushdie.
Yeah.
As well. It's just Richard
Phenomenal
Wolf.
List.
Yes. It's just a
That's
huge list.
So for $180, you can get that 100-speaker collection plus the best of WBAI. But you can also get both of these premiums if you become a WBAI buddy today. Now, what does it mean to be a buddy? It means you're a sustaining member of this radio station, a supporting member of this radio station. So you donate $10 a month, and it's deducted from your credit card. And, $10 a month to support this radio station. If you are not a WBAI buddy, please go to your phone and become one today. Call 212-209-2950.
And if you're not near a phone, you can also go online and go to WBAI.org and click Donate Now. And you can choose which program you'd like to support, and we hope you will support Health Styles.
Now, last night I couldn't do that, so you may not be able to do that, but if there is a comment section, say you support Health Styles, it doesn't go to our program. We donate our time. It goes to support the antenna, to support the few staff who are left at this station, operating this station, and most of the producers here are volunteer producers, so it doesn't pay us, but we appreciate your vote of confidence in Health Styles, and we're really looking forward to starting in June, being on weekly and bringing you programs that will deal with health and health policy. And I might say that over 30 years, because we Barbara Glickstein and I have been the producers in the past, we've been able to bring you information from the front lines of what's going on that nobody else is talking about. So we were able to broadcast about the resurgence of tuberculosis back in the 80s or 90s when nobody else was talking about it. And we were one of the first media outlets to talk about the politics of AIDS. And so we have a variety of connections locally and nationally, and then we pull that in. And now we've added Liz Seeger to our team of producers. She's not a nurse, but we forgive her for that.
Oh, thank you.
But she's a great journalist. And actually, you blog for the Association for Healthcare Journalists, or write for them.
I write for them regularly. I'm their topic editor on aging. Or, as I like to say, their aging topic editor. I'm not sure. Some days it goes either way.
Yes.
And I cover aging and other health issues for other media outlets. Yeah. Since I freelance, I've been in Consumer Reports. There's an article this month on healthy aging, New America Media. I try to really bring some of the real crucial stories, some structure and some framework in terms of policy and how it affects everybody. Yes. at the grassroots level.
Yes. And so we're talking about health and health care and health policy issues that we think all of us need to be aware of and to participate in the conversations about. So we urge you to support this radio station by calling 212-209-2950. If you are a healthcare professional, we know there are healthcare professionals out there in the listening audience. If you're a physical therapist, a social worker, a home health aide, a direct care worker, very important people. If you are a registered nurse, if you're a physician, we urge you to show your support of this kind of programming. You get a certain party line on many other health news outlets, and we are often bringing you the personal voice and the alternative view on some of these issues. And so we urge you to call 212-209-2950.
And one of the things I love about Health Styles, Diane, is that there is an opportunity to explore a lot of these issues in depth, particularly with an hour-long show.
Yes. Yes.
It just doesn't happen on the local evening news. It doesn't happen in the newspapers a lot of times because of cutbacks or office politics. But here we get to explore key issues in depth.
Yep. And starting in June, we're going to be opening up lines for listener calls so that you're participating in these conversations as well. As I said, you can always go onto the Center for Health Media and Policy's blog and post your comments at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. But right now, we'd like for you to go to that computer and make a donation online at wbai.org. Or call 212-209-2950. Again, for $50, you get the best of WBAI on a thumb drive. For $180, you get that plus this fabulous collection of over 100 speakers of name people who have progressive views. It's an 8-gigabyte thumb drive with hours and hours, scores of hours of presentations and interviews. So that's for $180. You get both of those thumb drives. And if you become a WBAI buddy for just $10 a month, you will also get both of those premiums. So call now at 212-209-2950. So we've got coming up in June. We're going to be doing more of this programming. We're going to be using this format of mostly having a magazine format, if you will, with about 20 minutes devoted to different topics. But we'll also bring you news updates at the top of the hour. So this morning, or this afternoon, today's program, we told you about the issue of potentially getting a free air conditioner if you qualify. So what other radio station is telling you about how to get a free air conditioner? We thought it was really important. We know that the BAI audience range has, there's a wide socioeconomic range in the WBAI audience. And for some people, they don't have a lot of means, let alone be able to buy an air conditioner. So we thought that information was important to you. We know that other people can afford more. We have listeners who have deep pockets. So those of you who have deep pockets, please go to your phones and support WBAI at the highest level possible. This is a crucial time for BAI. We're getting back on our feet, and we need your support. For those of you who are low income, make a donation of any level. The station appreciates your vote of support in whatever way you can. So you can call 212-209-2950 or go online at WBAI.org.
And where else can you find those stories? That's a very important issue, especially when it comes to elderly people, because we know how much the heat affects the health and well-being of the elderly. So even if you don't need an air conditioner, perhaps you know an older person that does.
Yes. And we also know that there is a large community of disabled people that listens to WBAI. We've long known that. Some of you used to call into the program on a regular basis. There was a Long Island Disabled Veterans group in particular that used to call in on a regular basis, and we always appreciated those calls. And so for those of you who really can't get out of your homes, this is also important information about the air conditioners. But we also know that WBAI is your lifeline. It is your companion in many ways. And so you may be on a limited income, and we appreciate that. But go make a small donation, whatever you can afford. And if you have a loved one who you know is a diehard WBAI listener, doesn't have the means to make a donation themselves, make a donation in their name by calling 212-209-2950. And let's just remind everybody, we're approaching Memorial Day.
Right.
And we know we have a large audience of veterans out there. And we are covering veterans' issues.
Yes. The last program we were on was veterans' health.
Yes.
And particularly the health of women veterans, who are often almost overlooked in some cases.
Yes.
And they struggle with issues like PTSD and feelings of self-worth just as frequently as the men seem to do. Where else are you going to find shows like that, that talk about these deeply important issues to so many people that have given selflessly to this country?
So if you are a veteran, or you have a family member or a friend who's a veteran, make a donation in their name today at 212-209-2950. Or go online at WBAI.org, WBAI.org, 212-209-2950. Well, Liz Seeger, we're about out of time. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. It's been fun.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to being on live on Thursdays from 1 to 2 beginning in June. So we're going to skip next week, but we're really looking forward to hearing from you. And again, if you have program ideas you'd like to hear about, go on our website and comment on today's, post a comment under today's post about today's program, and that's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Health Styles is brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program and co-director of that center.
And I'm Liz Siegert. I'm a senior fellow at the center and a new co-producer at Health Styles.
Yes. And we want to thank Reggie Johnson for engineering today's program. And thank you, the listeners, for tuning in. And please, this is the time to support WBAI at 212-209-2950. Have a great afternoon.